So I want you to picture this fading town.
Right.
It's Princeton, Kentucky. And it's a rainy Friday night in 1985.
The whole setting is just so atmospheric.
It really is.
Yeah.
You've got this neon light from a local diner. It's kind of spilling out across the wet pavement. And parked right in the shadows of this back lot is a Ford LTD Crown Victoria Cruiser.
Classic police car.
Exactly. The engine is idling. But here's the thing. When you look behind the wheel, you don't see, a hardened veteran cop.
No, not at all.
You see a 14-year-old boy. His name is Caleb Harlan.
It's just a kid.
Literally, he's sitting on a thick phone book just so he can see over the dashboard.
It's such a striking image.
He's wearing this patrol uniform that is, I mean, it's at least two sizes too big. The fabric is all bunching up at his
Hoodie,
shoulders.
basically swimming in it.
Right. And sitting right there in his lap is this meticulously kept folder. He's investigating this string of burglaries where these expensive, supposedly unbreakable locks are just being sheared clean through with a single stroke.
Which is terrifying because, I mean, the visual alone of a child drowning in an adult's uniform while he's hunting something dangerous in the dark,
Yeah.
it immediately establishes this profound sense of wrongness that just permeates this entire
Oh,
story.
absolutely.
Like you are looking at a system that is fundamentally broken down.
Which is exactly what we are exploring today in this deep dive. We're looking at the Southern noir novel Young Cop by Keith Adler.
Such a fantastic book.
It is. Now, for you listening, it's worth noting that Adler is actually adapting this novel into a fully AI-assisted 80-minute independent film.
Which is a huge project on its own.
Oh, massive. He's using all these tools like Higgs Field Cinema Studio for the video generation, GPT Image 2, 11 Labs for the voices, and Suno for the score.
And he's releasing it under Creative Commons, right?
He is, yeah. But today, our mission is squarely focused on the original text. We really want to get into the rich literary heartbeat of the story itself.
Because the core of that story revolves around this community that is just slowly being consumed by a new drug epidemic.
Right.
And what makes the premise so deeply unsettling is really the collective blindness of the adults.
They just refuse to see it.
Exactly. They are actively choosing not to look at the decay. So Caleb, this orphan middle schooler, he essentially just feeds his own childhood into the machinery of this town because, well, he is the only person who refuses to look away.
It's wild. It's as if Mayberry collided with True Detective.
That is exactly what it feels like.
And the only person brave enough to solve the case is a middle schooler with a little league bat and a notepad.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to describe it.
But okay, let's unpack this for a second, because the logical pushback here is obvious.
Right, the logistics of it all.
Exactly. How does a literal 14-year-old even end up riding shotgun as a patrol cop? Like, why didn't the state or child services just step in immediately?
Well, Adley grounds that absurdity in this very tragic reality of small town municipal power.
Okay, how so?
So when Caleb lost his family, the state was actually preparing to ship him off to this group facility in Paducah, but the local police chief, Chief Dutton, he decides to basically bend the rules to keep Caleb out of the system.
Just to keep him in town.
Yeah. And Dutton genuinely believes he is doing the kid a massive favor. He lets Caleb put on the uniform and ride along with this 34-year-old veteran named Marcus Robinson.
Thinking it'll give him what structure?
Exactly. He thinks it will give this grieving boy a sense of purpose. But the unintended consequence is that Dutton accidentally hands a traumatized, highly observant child the entire moral weight of a dying community.
And we see how Caleb handles that weight right away, because he rides the night shift, right? And he notices this pattern that all the adults are just completely ignoring.
The third Friday pattern.
Yes.
Yes.
Every third Friday, these expensive locks are sheared off, and it's not just petty theft anymore.
No, the stakes are getting way higher because there's this arrival of what the locals call something new.
Which is meth.
Right, crystal meth.
Yeah.
So the town is basically being eaten from the inside out.
And Caleb is tracking all of this. I mean, his evidence gathering is intense. He's got that folder, and he's tracking Bobby McClure's lumberyard schedule.
He finds that trailer off Dawson Road.
Yeah, and he spots Reno's 1977 black Trans Am with the California plates. He's putting all these pieces together.
And what's fascinating is that this meticulousness, it's really a coping mechanism for him.
Oh, for sure.
He catalogs everything because gathering data gives him this illusion of control. You know, in a world that has violently taken his family away, this is something he can actually manage.
Right. But then we hit this terrifying turning point. the criminals actually realize they're being hunted.
They do, and they change their pattern.
Which culminates in that awful Polaroid left on his cruiser. We'll get to that in a minute, but the tension there is just unbearable.
It really is.
But let's dive into the major themes here. Because you have this crushing weight of moral responsibility on Caleb.
Yeah, the cost of doing it right.
It's massive. He literally sacrifices his childhood. You read these scenes where he's living in this empty, completely quiet house.
Eating cold instant oatmeal all by himself.
Yeah, because his microwave broke and he won't ask for help. It's heartbreaking. He's protecting people who are too scared to act themselves.
And that ties perfectly into the theme of small town decay versus this quiet sacrifice.
Right, the contrast is stark.
Because outwardly, the town looks fine. You've got the church choirs, the diner coffee.
High school football games.
Exactly. It looks normal. But underneath, it's rotting. There's this amazing moment where Miss Coleman sings that hymn.
Oh, I know the one.
Love, so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all.
Yes. And it's not a spiritual moment at all.
No. Adler interprets it strictly through the lens of Caleb's moral sacrifice. It's not about religious dogma. It's about this town demanding his soul and his life just to keep itself afloat.
It really emphasizes the tragedy of his forced coming of age. I mean, he's a kid. There's that scene where he has to take a two-minute cry in a bathroom stall between high school periods.
And then just wipe his face and go back to pretending he's a hardened cop.
It's devastating. But, I mean, let me ask you this. Isn't it the adult's job to bear this weight?
Obviously, yes.
So why does Caleb feel like this is all on him, especially when actual authority figures are just looking the other way?
Well, that's the core theme of systemic failure, right? Fear completely paralyzes these adults. They see the California plates, they see the signs, but getting involved means risking their own safety.
So they just stay quiet.
Yeah, and Caleb, because he's already lost everything, he feels like he's the only one who has nothing left to lose.
Let's talk about the character dynamics, because Caleb and Marcus, his partner, that relationship is fascinating.
It really is. They are such polar opposites.
Caleb is so hyper-observant, armed with his folder and this desperate need for order, and then Marcus.
Marcus has just half-assed it for years.
Right. But not because he's lazy.
No, it's pure trauma. Years ago, he found an overdosed kid behind a feed store, and he had to be the one to tell the mother.
Oh.
Yeah. It broke him, so he just stopped caring to protect himself. Until Caleb's bravery, just sitting right next to him every night, forces him to finally step up.
Caleb kind of shames him into being a real cop again.
Basically, yeah.
But Caleb also has these anchors, women who refuse to let him just disappear into the badge. Like Aaron and Miss Coleman.
They are crucial to his survival.
Aaron gives him that copy of The Outsiders, right?
With the inscription.
Stay gold. Dash E.
It's so poignant. She sees him losing his innocence, and she's just begging him to hold on to it.
And Miss Coleman. I love her character. She owns the corner store, and she's fighting these secret court battles for guardianship of Caleb.
Always leaving the upstairs light on for him.
It's this quiet, fierce protection. Contrast that with Chief Dutton and Bobby McClure, who represent the corrupted adults.
Oh, man. Dutton is just paralyzed by finances.
Paying, what, $2,400 a month for his mother in Shady Oaks?
Yeah, so he can't afford to rock the boat and lose his pension.
But then there's Bobby McClure. And to me, Bobby is the ultimate monster hiding in plain sight.
100%.
He's completely weaponized small-town trust. He's using his Little League clipboard as a shield. He goes to First Baptist, pays cash for a new truck, and runs this drug ring while his own nephew is just descending into addiction.
It's chilling because everyone trusts the Little League coach.
Right.
And that leads us to the victims, people like Tammy Dalton.
The canary in the coal mine.
Exactly. She warns Caleb in the alley about what this drug does to people.
And Ricky Bates. That one hurts. He's this innocent band kid. He passes Caleb a note that says, Atticus needs backup.
A little Mockingbird reference.
Yeah. But then later, Caleb sees him buying meth at 1 a.m. It just shatters the illusion that anyone is safe.
Adler uses these brilliant symbols to drive that home, like the contrast between the badge and the bat.
The oversized borrowed badge.
Right, which represents this completely unnatural adult burden.
Versus the Little League bat.
Exactly. Carved with C-A-L-E-B on the handle. Smoothed out from unfinished games.
It's literally the ghost of his lost childhood.
And then there's the unbreakable lock.
Oh, yes. The $400 locks that get cut clean through.
They perfectly represent the town's shattered illusion of safety. They thought money could keep the bad things out.
But the bad things are already inside.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Because the Polaroid, it just completely flits the entire script.
It is the scariest moment in the book.
Isn't that the exact moment? His symbol of authority, the police cruiser, becomes a symbol of his extreme vulnerability.
Yes. He thinks the car makes him a cop. It makes him untouchable.
And then he finds that photo on his windshield.
A picture of his own cruiser, taken from the dark, with "nice car" written in block letters.
It's just, ugh. It's basically saying, we see you, kid.
Exactly. You're not a cop. You're a child in a glass box. It's terrifying.
It really is. And it makes you think about why this story matters right now. Because Brinson represents really any modern community or organization facing a crisis.
A crisis everyone knows about, but nobody wants to address.
Right. The pressure to look away is universal. We all want to stay in our lane, mind our business, and just protect our own peace.
It takes an incredible amount of courage to confront the something new that's destroying your community.
It really does. So what does this all mean for you listening right now? I mean, in our own lives, with our own information overload, how often do we walk past our own broken locks simply because looking away is easier than fixing them?
That's the real question.
Yeah.
Because fixing them costs something.
And we see that cost in the resolution of the story. The climax is deeply satisfying, but it's costly.
The raid on Dawson Road.
Yeah. The successful raid, the arrests. The town is finally safe, but it's forever changed.
The innocence is gone.
Completely gone.
Yeah.
But Caleb's final decision is so powerful. He's standing at that payphone.
He's got the quarter.
He's holding this apology note for Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides to drop the quarter in the return slot. He throws away the note.
He finally accepts Miss Coleman's guardianship.
And Aaron's friendship. He lets himself be a person again.
Which is such a hard-won victory.
It is. But I want to leave you with this final kind of provocative thought. Because Caleb had to give up his childhood so his town could have a future, right?
Yeah.
He eventually grows up to be the real Sheriff Harlan.
Yeah, the epilogue shows that.
But if you were the only person holding the line in your community, at what point does the uniform you put on to protect others start preventing you from actually living your own life?
That's a heavy question.
Can you ever really take the armor off once you've learned how vulnerable everything is?
I don't know if you ever completely can.
Me neither. But it's something to think about. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Young Cop.
It was a great discussion.
Definitely. Go check out the novel. And keep an eye out for that AI-assisted film adaptation. Until next time, maybe take a look at the locks in your own life.